So while you're evaluating, you have now estimated everything. You've estimated all your expenses. You've understood how these estimates work. Based on these estimates, you'll use different evaluation techniques. So you'll develop decision models. So the next step now is, after you have estimated everything, let's build a decision model. These decision models would be based on evaluation techniques. The previous chapter, we have seen these capital budgeting techniques, which we used to take decisions whether to accept or reject the project, whether the company should invest in the project or no. So be it net present value, if you recollect, we use present value of future cash flows. We deducted the cash outflow from it to find out if we have a positive number or negative to decide whether I want to invest in the project or no. Internal rate of return. Quickly, let's do a quick summary. We said it's the benchmark or the hurdle rate, the minimum rate of return the project needs to earn. Equivalent annual cost method. We've not discussed this because we don't take it as an evaluation technique for project per se. We'll say, I'm getting into a project where I have to incur the cost. Maybe there's a change in technology and I'm forced to invest in a fixed asset when it comes to, you know, a particular technology. So that's nothing but I don't see much of cash inflows maybe from that project. I see mostly cost going into that project. If that's the case, I'll find out if I deploy X technology, what's the cost? If I deploy Y technology, what is the cost? If I deploy Z technology, what is the cost? And I'll try to choose that particular technology or project which gives the least cost. So I'm going to only look at equivalent annual cost method where I'm combining all the annual cost every year to see my cost numbers are less. However, for the other methods, we discussed whether the project is profitable or no. This is separate, this is a little different compared to other methods because the primary focus is on cost. Next is payback period. So you said payback method will talk about how many years will you be able to recover your entire investment. Discounted payback will take present value of future cumulative cash inflows to find out what's the number of or how many number of years would you require to actually recover your entire initial invest when you look at present value of future cash inflows. Accounting rate of return would take the profit before tax divided by cash outflow to find out what's the return on the project. How much percent return would you make? So you will deploy these decision models by using evaluation techniques, take decision whether to invest in the project or no. So after estimating, you know, use these techniques to calculate the project profitability and take a decision whether to accept the project or reject the project. After you have estimated, there is a possibility I had 10 projects, you know, and 10 proposals I loved, and out of these 10, all 10 are profitable. So what am I going to do? I'm going to rank the projects. So I know I have 10 projects in hand, all 10 are profitable, now, but I may have limitation with respect to my budget, or I'm confused which one to start first, which one to start later. So I'll start ranking my capital expenditure projects. So many organizations would basically propose capital projects. They'll try to only look at those projects which are economically acceptable. So they should be profitable. Okay, so all the projects are profitable, but now I don't have sufficient money to put money in all the 10 projects. So what am I going to do? I'm going to rank the project based on which gives me the best or the higher returns. So the one which gives me higher returns among all the 10 would be ranked 1. And the second highest would be ranked 2 and so on. So ranking of the projects will help you understand in quantitative terms which project to be taken up first. It will usually also try to match it with the minimum desired rate of return. So I would always try to rank the projects with respect to profitability and also check what is the source of capital I'm going to use, or what is the cost of capital involved while, you know, procuring money from the market. So I'll compare both vis-a-vis to rank the project and decide which project I want to take up. I'll look at the minimum rate of return. We said minimum rate of return is something like a hurdle rate, which is internal rate of return, or the discounting rate. I'll see if I'm able to earn that. And I'll see which particular project requires lesser investment and gives me a maximum profit. Okay, this rate would be usually help you understand what's the net present value of each. And you could also use net present value and IRR together to rank the projects. So rank the project, try to get the maximum returns, looking at the minimum rate, you know, of investment in the project. After you've done this, now your estimates are done, your evaluation is done, your ranking is also done. So after you rank it, what will you do? You'll select the required rate of return. This is another very important criteria. I don't know what should be the discounting rate. I don't know what's the required rate of return. So how do I decide? So what usually companies do when we talk about required rate of return, they try to evaluate all these proposals based on two approaches. First, they will calculate a cost of capital. I'll find out if I'm going to go to the market, get money from my equity shareholder, what's the cost involved in it? How much return does my equity shareholder expect? If I go to the bank, what percentage do I get a loan? That is nothing but the cost of capital. So first, I'll calculate the cost of capital, take it as my required rate of return. Second, I will try to see that in the industry, if somebody is going to take up a project, what has been a basic rate of return which the competitor or which the industry practitioner has earned. So how much return did a project give to somebody else if a similar project was deployed? Usually, in theory, required of rate of return also talks about an average risk. You know, I don't know, I'm expecting that I'll get from the market 8% loan and I'll be able to do the project. But that's not necessary that the bank will agree to 8%. And the bank says, no, I want 12%. Or maybe the equity shareholder I was expecting wants 15%. You know, returns. However, the equity shareholder says, no, every year this return should increase. First year, give me 15%, next year, I want 18%. So there's a lot of risk with respect to this rate. So selection of this required rate of return becomes very, very tedious. These are some of the quantitative estimates which we need to make. Now, quantitative estimates look good. That means I know I can quantify something, put it into numbers. But we need not forget that non-quantitative evaluation techniques are, you know, factors are equally important. So when I'm taking up a project or expanding, starting a new, you know, going to launch a new product in the market or start a new business, I don't only have to look at quantitative numbers, I also have to look at some other factors. Now, what are these non-quantitative factors? First, whenever you're going for any qualitative consideration, try to see your project or decision matches your business strategy. So I told you, if you are Maruti, you are not going to look at becoming BMW by launching a very high-end vehicle which has no customers. Because when I say Maruti, maybe I am presumed and assumed to be a comparatively low-cost manufacturer in the market compared to a high-end vehicle. So what's the relationship of your product launch with respect to your business strategy? Does it match your business strategy? What kind of product line or location are you going to select? So which product line are you going to venture? So are you going to get into similar business? Okay, I am making a normal car. I'm also going to make an electric car. I'm going to make an hybrid car. I'm going to make a, you know, fuel efficient car. Which product line I'm going to get in? And what would be the location, which target or geographical region I'm targeting, whether I have customers there, what is the significance of this enterprise, whether I, you know, that particular market has accepted me as a manufacturer, whether I'll be able to do justice, what is the timing of these funds flowing in the project. So when would I start earning money? Whether before the project launch, immediately after the product launch, or I have to wait for 2 years, 3 years, or 5 years for the funds to flow. Who's going to manage the entire project? Who would head the project? Who are the employees? How many hours they will be spending? Who are the technical engineers in this project? What is my marketing capacity? What are my budget? You know, what are my constraints? Even if I'm trying to, you know, try to push sales in the market. What is my competitors doing when it comes to non-quantitative evaluation also? Whether I'll be able to strive a balance between my investment and my profitability, whether there will be a proper product classification, whether my customers would accept this or no. So all these non-quantitative factors also need to be considered while you are making a project plan, where you're estimating your future numbers. Do consider non-quantitative factors also for having the right number in place. So don't forget your business cycle for doing an estimate. Don't just take quantitative numbers, but also look at your strategy before finalizing a project. Now, This is with respect to what's happening with the company when it comes to project evaluation or, you know, product or project estimates. What happens if you are a government or non-profit organization? Will things change? See, capital expenditure projects are also done by government or non-profit organizations. These are conceptually similar and same. The only difference between a government and non-profit organization and a normal business is for a non-profit organization or government, we also try to look at what benefits would happen for the society. So that's the major difference. So I'm not only estimating cost, I'm also looking at social benefits. So this is one of the most very crucial criteria. So as a government or non-profit organization, I'm going to look at not only economic benefits, but I'm also going to look at what social benefit this project would get in. So I will quantify the social benefit. Say, for example, if government feels that they want to build a metro, you know, project in the city, they are looking at the number of vehicular traffic. They are thinking that the petrol consumption would come down with the traffic going down. The time which people spend on the road is going to become less. So it does have a social benefit as the pollution would be less because of less carbon emissions of the vehicle. So you will quantify this, find out direct benefit to the society, whether the taxpayer will be happy with the investment which you do. Does it come with a social benefit or no? What is an indirect benefit? We talked about direct benefit. What's an indirect benefit? Whether the taxpayers will really see value in the metro project or no. One example. So whatever the government is going to do, whether the taxpayer will be happy or not happy is a social benefit which will define. So in case of government and non-profit organization, one clear distinction is also quantifying the social benefits number and not only looking at benefits which are economic. Okay, let us now understand how is this capital expenditure decision administered? What is the process? So it basically starts with the preliminary proposal. So everybody would have a preliminary proposal of the idea, how the project would go, what exactly idea is. In case you like the initial proposal mentioned, if yes, you go to the next stage. That means preliminary project review. You will review the idea and see if it is feasible. If not feasible, scrap the idea completely. If feasible, you go for an appropriation request. Appropriation request talks about the money involved, how much money will you require, at what stage of the project. Once that's also finalized and you qualify, you'll be able to, you know, manage these funds across the year. You go to the next step, that is proposal review committee. So you'll form a review committee who's going to check the entire project. If it is really worth investing, you'll do all your capital budgeting technique here, accept, reject the project. If it's rejected, the entire idea is scrapped. You go, and in case it's accepted, we go to the next stage, which is the final approval stage. You receive an approval and you implement the project. So project gets installed after passing through so many proposal, you know, reviews at different stages. At each stage, there could be an acceptance or rejection depending on the company policies and the company decision. Okay. Now, since we have seen the process, let us talk about what are these. You know, what is happening at each stage. So as we're going to do a preliminary study, you need to also understand that each proposed idea would have a policy manual. Now, I am proposing a capital expenditure project for the company where I want the company to start a new manufacturing plant somewhere in Rajasthan. If that's going to happen, what am I going to do? I need to make an entire policy manual. This policy manual will say what's the proposal, what my proposed capital expenditure budget would look like, and whether this particular investment into a new plant can be justified, whether we have the required resources, whether we'll be able to get the money, whether we'll be able to get the labor, how would this entire project look like? So formal procedure, rules, regulation with respect to the proposal would be reviewed fairly and consistently, and they would be put up in the manual. So manual would be like a blueprint. It would be like a Bible, which any project manager would get back to in order to understand what is expected from the project. So I'll say it would have some specifications. So policy manual would talk about annually updated forecast of capital expenditure. How much money are you allowed to spend each year? At what stage would the money come? When and how can you give the money requirement? That is the appropriation steps. The appraisal methods to be used to evaluate process, which capital budgeting techniques were used, what kind of number or you know answers have you got, whether it is really effective or no, what would be the minimum acceptable return or you know which you're going to expect. So what is also the hurdle rate of any project for the different risk associated with the project? You may also define your different risk and find out the right benchmark rate. You will talk about what are the limits of authority, what's allowed for somebody to do in the project, what's not allowed, what is the control on these capital expenditure, how much you know money could be asked for in an appropriation request while you are working on the project, what is the cap on demanding this money, the procedure to be followed for any accepted project, and the monitoring. How would the monitoring of this project happen? What would happen if it's an adverse impact on the performance? How it would be reviewed while it is implemented? So policy manual will be a blueprint which somebody would go back to when you want to start the project. After you've made this policy manual, now make the preliminary project review. So now your preliminary project report gets reviewed. Now who's going to review it? It's one of the first formal steps. There could be a committee could be set up. Maybe you as a head or a CFO or head of finance may decide that you want to first review it on your own, or maybe form a team of all the heads of the company, get them together to assess. So this is the first formal step in doing a capital expenditure decision. The report is ready, policy manual is in place, and now people are going to review or assess what's going to happen. So this assessment is often needed. Why? To basically help anybody understand whether it is considered enough to take up the project or no. And it's also like a guide to a company to understand whether taking up the project would really give any kind of profits or no. It also says how much money would be required at each step of the project and what kind of appropriation request could come for the project. This would help a company do an early screening whether the project is worth pursuing. If in case you do a thorough review of this particular project, it will minimize the lead time to implement a very promising project. So you'll be able to put this project, you know, which is very promising in place with lesser lead time, less waiting time, and faster, you know, lesser lead time means faster cash inflows for the project. It will also help you to coordinate activities associated with the project. Becomes, you know, easy to coordinate different activities of the project if a preliminary project review is done very well. Next is appropriation request. Appropriation request, very important. Any project, for a project to be successful, money is the blood flowing in the project. So if you're looking at the money, all required documentation should be there. Whenever you require money, whether you want to spend it to buy the particular fixed asset or any other, you know, decision with spending on any different cost. So very, very important request. All the documentation required is based on this appropriation request. You need to always put in writing why you require X money, what decision, what document have you created, what decision was taken with respect to your request. Somebody is going to evaluate and review your project, and how are you going to spend this money. This appropriation request will also give information with respect to the timing and the amount of cash inflows and outflows which are going to happen with the money which you are going to spend. The appropriation request usually are prepared for all capex decisions. So whenever a company is going for a capex decision, whether it is procuring any funds, procuring any machinery or procuring any fixed asset, you would always go for an appropriation request, as this is the major expense than any other non-routine repairs. So you'll always require it, you know, for a minimum amount also and for a maximum amount also. So non-routine repairs could also be part of this appropriation request. There could be some kind of petty cash kept, but an appropriation request would usually be used and documented well for a head to evaluate how the money is getting spent in the project and what kind of cash inflows or outflows are going to happen with the request which you're giving. In addition to this request, it's always required for you to give supplementary information with respect to funding. You also need to understand that where the fund is coming on, what was the original estimate, and whether you have exceeded the funding which has already come. So if you have already procured assets, whether you have used the funds properly, whether there is any kind of retirement request for assets, you need to get them replaced. What were the original estimates? Whether you are in adverse situation or favorable situation when it comes to spending. So don't only look at appropriation requests as a funding requirement. Also check whether you are in the limit of whatever spending, was defined in your initial policy manual or your initial report. Very, very important stage. I said each appropriation request need to be documented well. There should be a formal form which every company usually prepares, a particular format. One sample is given in the book for your understanding of how an appropriation request could be drawn. So ensure that you have each request documented. This documentation would help you understand why a particular money was spent. So why an appropriation request was made, why finance or money was asked, and what was the purpose of asking the money, and which day or which month or which quarter, which time was the money asked for, and the total amount which goes to the in the operating cash flows. So how much was the cash outflow? That calculation becomes easy if you have all these papers documented well. Now, this request also helps, this documentation of this request also helps you to understand the timing and amount of investment for you to know when will you receive the salvage value. What is the required or what is your expected salvage value, in which year you are expecting it, when you intend to, change your asset. Major assumptions with respect to all your estimates would also come here. All your operating costs, whatever you have assumed, whether you are in budget or no, what were your assumptions for those costs would be put up here in appropriation request documentation. And you'll also check what is the economic desirability of the project. Whether your project is very sensitive, you'll do a discounting cash flow to find out the rate of return, and also try to understand what is the change in the basic data. See, this appropriation request documentation is not only documenting your request, it is also comparing it with whatever you have documented earlier. And it is trying to understand whether you are in your limits of spending money or no. So I know my total cash outflows. I have already accounted for them. I've already budgeted them something. Whether I'm very much in place, because it's going to impact the margins of the project. This documentation is also reviewed. It's also a review for in each individual or each, head, understanding what alternatives could be used. See, I've budgeted for a raw material at the rate of 40 rupees and I'm buying it from X vendor, and the vendor now says, I'm not going to give you at 40 rupees. I'm going to give you now at 45 rupees because he sees a lot of demand coming in. So is there an alternative vendor which I have identified? Will that vendor give me at 40 or 42 rupees? What is my review for alternatives for my project? Should I completely change the raw material type? Will that work? Will it impact the performance of the product? What is the impact of these changes on my project? Okay, whether my cash inflows would change, whether the customers would prefer it, not prefer it. This is needs to also be documented. So all implications with respect to the project, need to be put up in this documentation. You need to also specify the financing method you're going to use. List down all the sources of finance which you intend to go with. Talk about whom are you going to generate the cash from. What is the cost with respect to that particular source, and try to underwrite that in your project. Also mention what actions are you going to recommend in case of any adversities with respect to cash. So in case you have exceeded or the manager has exceeded in the cost, what action is recommended, allowed, disallowed, how are you going to change or what kind of change will you get? Please document that too with your in your policy manual to and verify it with your appropriation request. After you've done this appropriation request work, kindly review and approve things. Very important to monitor what's happening with the project. So you've taken a capital expenditure decision, you have pooled in a lot of money, you are now waiting for the cash inflows to come. So it's important to review and verify everything. So when it comes to the policy manual, the project also define who will be the certifying signatures, who are the decision makers in this project, and how the entire approval process would work. So talk about the signatories, talk about the approval mechanism, and actually define or name the people who will be approving at different levels. Try to also give a certification, maybe a partial or complete certification at different level. So maybe I've completed my project at 20%. Somebody should come check that 20% is done and certify my work. So that certification also needs to be in place, so I know whether I met my timeline, my completion is as per what is planned in my timeline. So continuous review and approval also ensures that your costs are in place, your expenses are in place. So ensure a proper review and approval mechanism put in place. Now, we talked about a lot of documentation, starting from policy manual through to review and approval. We are defining people, we are talking about documenting the procedures, we even documented the techniques or the rate. Now, what is the benefit of creating so much of docket? Okay, why create so much of documentation? Why have everything put in form of a policy manual or a blueprint to start a project? The very basic importance of documentation is standard terminology. So I defining a set, or I defining a current asset, or I defining credit period should be same as any other person in the project understanding the credit period. So the policy manual, when documented with different terminologies, there is a unique terminology which is used by everybody. We are using the same terminology, we speak the same language when it comes to the project. So it will make work standardized. So there's a standardized terminology. We are estimating all the techniques which we have documented. We are not trying to use something which was not documented. We are very clear on what methods of appraisal should be used, what is the timeline of the project. We have already a blueprint in place, and we know how what is the time period to complete the project in order to earn cash inflows. So documentation has this basic, first very basic advantage of having a standard terminology in place for each one involved in the project. Second, whenever I am documenting anything, it also gives me facts with respect to the type of appropriation to be done. Okay, so I am defining when will the money requirement happen, which year, what would be the reason for asking for that money, and what is the report which I need to present each time I spend the money. So this report would be reviewed by whom, who's going to approve it, who are the principal managers, and how I am going to promote this to showcase that the money is used objectively. I want to ensure that each penny spent is going to give me maximum return. So that should be seen in your documentation. If you're putting a process in place, you're documenting it well, it would be very easy for to look at each type of appropriation. This documentation would also encourage faster decision making. Okay, everybody knows what's the process to be followed for documentation. This will decrease the lead time for decisions also to be taken, and approval of expenditures would be faster with greater confidence. I don't have to delegate this to somebody. I know who's the person who's going to approve it. And I know who's going to, what kind of expense I'm authorized to do. So it would be faster, lead time would be less for taking up any decision, and decision making would be faster. Fourth, very important, benefit of this documentation is standardization of appraisals. I'm going to appraise the project, I'm going to review the project, I'm going to look at both tangible as well as intangible aspects of the expenditures which I do. What kind of impact does this expenditure have today or in long-term future, and decide based on this documentation. So each paper documentation, each appropriation request, I know how much expenses I have made, whether they were really required, not required, and this will help me for my future long-term or next year planning. How can I reduce this, whether I should do a particular expense or no. So documentation would also help you to standardize a lot of appraisal and reviews with respect to spending of money. This is with respect to the entire, procedure which you are going to follow. Now, let us also look at what are the general trends and developments which have emerged in the capital expenditure decision. A lot of changes with the advent of technology have got capital expenditure decisions being made faster. They are now embedded using in your processes in your company. So first is advanced analytics and AI. So use of business analytics and artificial intelligence to make these project proposals and to monitor this project is something which is growing and gaining a lot of importance. So I may use AI tools to actually have a good representation of my achievement. So if I'm going to make a Gantt chart, it's going to talk about whether I'm meeting the timelines or not. So the AI tool will help me understand X thing done, whether you know I'm meeting or how near I am to my project completion, how many more days. So AI could predict that for me. Next is use of real-time data or Internet of Things. So I'll use Internet of Things and use the real-time data for a project every year to see what's going to happen next. So I'll use the real-time demand numbers or maybe footfall in the company and extrapolate this information to understand out of 10 people, customers moving in my shop, if 8 people are buying, what is the expected footfall in the near future and how much demand or sales I'm expecting. So use of real-time data and IoT could also help you understand what could be your sales number going ahead. Third, very new and important innovation which is coming is sustainability and environmental, social and governance factor, right, namely ESG factors. So capital expenditure decisions are now no more only looking at investment in fixed assets per se earning profit. Each company, especially the top companies in the market, are basically looking at coming up with solutions which are taking care of the triple bottom line. So ESG and sustainability factors are taken into consideration because a lot of investors also want to invest in such projects which are sustainable. So sustainability and ESG factors are something which are now impacting CapEx decision of companies. If I have a CSR fund with me, why not start a manufacturing plant with having maximum women force in it? Okay, or why not try to use or deploy a new technology which is more environmental friendly than what I have right now? Why not use solar panels? So sustainability and ESG factors are also impacting our capital expenditure decision. The fourth very important aspect is risk management and scenario analysis. So I told you, you can use a decision tree. Similarly, risk management talks about first listing down what are the different key risks for a company for this project, what are the expected or key risks which you have identified, and making a scenario analysis depending on different factors. Scenario analysis, you know, numbers would be predicting your sales number based on different scenarios, boom, recession, or maybe having a competitor coming in place, eating up your market share, whatever you're expecting. So build in your cash inflow numbers or build in the number based on different scenarios and try to ensure you're assessing your risk well and using a lot of risk assessment methodology to make minimum risk with maximum returns. Next is data visualization and reporting. We already discussed in the previous chapter the use of Power BI. So I may use business intelligence, I may create interactive dashboards for my team to understand what's the project status. Instead of only looking at one project, I may have thousands of projects or hundreds of projects to look at. So this visualization helps me in better reporting what's happening with the project, what is the percentage of project achievement, what is my expenditure. I may use a red and green color to talk about favorable and adverse situation when it comes to numbers of cost, operating cost. So you could use a lot of data visualization and reporting, and that's going to also make your entire evaluation more interactive and effective. Decentralized finance, capital expenditure decision no longer is dependent on one source of capital. It's no longer only dependent on bank loan. We have different formats of sources of finance coming in. So keep it open for the project proposer to talk about what sources is that person really recommending, how would these sources come. Also try to talk about these sources in your initial policy manual. Give different options. Keep it open. You should be open to take debt. You should be open to have a venture capitalist or any form of source of capital required in the business. In case you fall short of working capital, why not take a working capital loan? So decentralized finance decisions. So decisions are faster when it comes to finance. Don't restrict it centrally. Have agile decision making. Your policy manual talks about what is the process, how would the entire decision flow. So ensure you are very fast in, adapting to decisions based on market scenario. You are very aggressive in your policy. You are not waiting for approvals to make changes in the project to earn more money. See, being agile, being fast is very important in order to capture the maximum market. So profitability will only come if you are very fast in taking decisions. So have an agile decision-making process is something new which we can see in capital expenditure decisions. There are a lot of shift in capital expenditure decision post-pandemic. We've seen a lot of people are shifting base to states or to countries which are giving a lot of tax benefits. So post-pandemic, a lot of people are preferring to have the same desk shared by three people. They don't make it a mandate for people to come to office. So what kind of, whether you really require a bigger office space or no, also depends on what kind of policy are you following for your company. So post-pandemic, this particular change has also changed the capital expenditure decision. Initially, all companies wanted big offices with all people coming to work. Now they're looking at having a smaller space, maybe with desk sharing. So post-pandemic shift is also impacting capital expenditure decision and regulatory changes. So looking at tax subsidies given by the state, what kind of government, norms are coming with respect to air pollution, environment control. All this would make you understand what kind of asset you need to invest in, what kind of project you need to invest in. So these are some of the general trends and developments which have emerged right now in capital expenditure decision. I hope it's clear how you want to take it ahead for your own company when it comes to capital expenditure. Thank you from my side.